Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Pleased to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. This tends to be one of our chattiest and most enjoyable hours of All Sides Weekend. And today should be no exception. We welcome Suzanne Jaffe, who is the creative director at the Thurber House, for a return engagement. Cassie Rose is here, WOSU's book critic. Cassie's blog is indispensable if you love to read. It's called thelongestchapter.com. And Kevin Griffith from Capital University, poet, professor of creative writing, and smarter than all of us put together. Delighted to have you all here. So we're talking about a lot of things, but since Suzanne is with us today, the Thurber House has summer writers series or picnics that have been long popular. So it's time for us to ask you to invite us all to the summer picnics at the Thurber House.
It is my pleasure. Actually, this is our 29th season, and Thurber House has only been in existence for 30 years, so you can see that this is one of our longest-running programs. What's wonderful about the summer literary picnics is it shines the spotlight on Ohio authors. It's all about Ohio authors. That's a wonderful part of it, and the other part of it is when the weather's nice, it takes place on the side lawn of Thurber House, and we do have catered box dinners, but you can bring your own dinner. But the great thing is you can also bring your own alcoholic beverage.
Adult beverage, yes.
Adult. Okay. Is that how we say it?
Wonderful. Okay. Yes, okay. Thank you. All right.
Yeah. And it's just wonderful. This year, we started actually 2 weeks ago with a gentleman by the name of Scott McKenzie, who did a book on Bozo the Clown, which was very funny and wonderful.
The Bozo the Clown?
The Bozo.
I remember him very well.
Bozo himself, I think, came from Akron.
Okay.
And this coming Wednesday, speaking of Akron, we are bringing in, this is a wonderful story of how the picnics work, a gentleman by the name of David Giffels. And I guess 3 years ago, we did an emerging author series for the picnics, and he was one of the emerging authors. Well, now he is doing his own picnic with a great book called The Hard Way on Purpose. And this is really, these are essays and dispatches filled with love and wit about Akron, Ohio. It's all about his love, David's love for the Rust Belt. And no matter what goes on there, the loss of jobs, the love of bowling, there is great energy, and these people are very good and they care very much. And he was a former journalist, a columnist for the Akron Beacon Journal. So he will be here on Wednesday. And come. Please, tickets are available.
How do we get tickets?
Tickets for anything Thurber House is www.thurberhouse.org.
What if it rains?
Yes. Well, if it rains, we go to the Columbus Museum of Art.
Okay. Also nice. Also
very,
lovely.
Very nice. Very and nice. Actually, if it's so hot that it's unbearable outside, we will go there as well because of the air conditioning.
Great. Thank you, Nanette. Yes. Very good exactly. Idea. Thank you very much for that. Cassie Rose, good to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you.
You always have the best books to recommend, so I'm going to get right to it and ask you for a recommendation of a great summer read.
I think I'll start with Ordinary Grace by William Kent Kruger. This book I would recommend for the summer because it's very involving with the characters, because it takes place over a summer in the 1960s, because it's about an older middle-aged man looking back on that summer when he was 13 years old, and the son of a Methodist minister, he becomes exposed to all the many ways of death in accident, natural causes, and also in a crime.
And the summer read, Cassie, light.
So, well, it is light. It's not a thriller. It's not the light, funny, or whatever. But it's involving because it's summertime. It's 1960s summer, and he's 13. It's not the summertime the kids have now, where they're overscheduled. He's doing all the things he shouldn't be doing. He's snooping on the adults. He's eavesdropping and discovering all these things, and you really fall in love with it. You fall in love with him, with his family, and in the middle, then comes this mystery. That's when it becomes, I mean, you're turning the pages all along, but that's when it's, you are perplexed, don't know what's going on, and you need to get to the end.
Is it a puzzle?
A little bit, and it builds up to it very well. I will say also that Ordinary Grace won the Best Novel Award in the Edgars, which is what they were announced in May. And that's a huge award to get. I mean, best novel of all the, you could say, the mystery or the intrigue, the crime novels that were in competition with him. This guy won it for this. And it's, I wouldn't even say it's a crime novel. I would say it's a literary crime. But the crime is... it's still a crime, but it's soft. And you'll know what I mean when you read it. And it's really heartrending, too.
I know for summer reading especially, I like page-turners. I can't put this down. Would you put that in this category?
I would say it not in the way that it's a thriller, like I would say I Am Pilgrim, which has just come out, which is a thriller page-turner, or The Truth About Harry Quebert Affair. I don't know how to pronounce that. I mean, those are major thrillers that are being billed as the summer big books. This one is a page-turner because it's involving. You want everyone to leave you alone. So you can be by yourself with this book, or you look forward to it at night after work or on the weekend.
Sounds like a good book for those of us married a long time. William Kent Kruger is the author. Do you know him?
I do not.
Okay.
I
mean, you know his work? Is this his first novel?
Or? It is not his first novel. He has many behind him. He is a highly praised literary writer. And this book got a lot of attention, but I think it was also a surprise to win the Edgar Best Novel Award.
Those tend to be good reads if they're surprised and they win high-profile awards. But, Kevin, you have a book there that intrigues me on the top of your pile, Famous Writers I Have Known.
Yes, and this is a fantastic book. It's hard to find really good funny books, funny and light, but yet very well written. And so this was a really good find for me. This is written by James Magnuson, Famous Writers I Have Known, James Magnuson. Magnuson is the director of the MFA program at UT Austin, so he knows how to write and he knows how to teach, and he's written a lot of other novels. This is a very funny setup, though. In this novel, the main character is Frankie Abbandonato. He's a Brooklyn con man. To make a long story short here, spit it out, a con goes wrong. He has to get on a plane at random in LaGuardia. He just picks a plane to Austin, Texas. Now, interestingly, in a plot twist, he looks exactly like this famous reclusive writer, V.S. Mole, who's sort of loosely based on Salinger. He's a Salinger-like writer who has written only one novel, but he's incredibly famous. And UT Austin has been able to get him to come to visit. This is a huge thing. But V.S. Mole and Frankie Abbandonato look really similar. So the con man lands in Texas, Austin, gets off the plane, and a trio of MFA students sees him and said, "Oh, here he is, you know, come on." And they usher him into their car and drive him to the visiting writer's house. He gets to the visiting writer's house. He's left alone for a few moments, and he sees on the answering machine there's a message. He presses it, and it's actually V.S. Mole saying, "I just can't go through with it. I'm so sorry. I'm freaking out here. I'm staying in Maine, not going to visit." He immediately deletes that, seeing he has a perfect opportunity here. And so the rest of the novel is this con man running creative writing workshops, giving incredibly absurd advice that the students are, of course, eating up, and miraculous things happen, like they're workshopping a novel, and they look at him for sage advice, and he sort of just stares into space, and then will suddenly say, "Make the main character into a woman. I think the truck driver should be a woman and not a man." And so the student goes back and changes the whole novel around, and next thing you know, she gets a $200,000 advance from a big publisher. It's just a hoot. And at the same time, at the end of the novel, of course, the person he's conned in Brooklyn is a mobster, and so they're closing in. They're beginning to figure out what's going on here and closing in. And he also develops a relationship with a elderly writer named Rex Schoenger, who's loosely based on James Michener. Michener founded the whole Texas writing program with all the millions he made on his novels. So it's a fantastic, fun novel. If you're looking something that's not too heavy-handed and that you can read and thoroughly enjoy, and it's intelligent and you can read it over a couple nights, Famous Writers I Have Known, James Magnuson. Worth your time.
You said something that I picked up on immediately. You said funny. It's a funny book, and it's hard to find funny books. Can anybody else recommend a funny book? Out loud book?
Anything by Ian Frazier and anything by Calvin Trillin.
Okay. And how about you, Cassie?
I recently read a very funny book, and it is Laugh Out Loud. It's called Since the Layoffs by Ian Levison. One of the things I do during the summertime is I pick up books off my reading table that have been sitting there for a long time. And this one had been since a trip to New York City where I, Partners in Crime bookstore, I found this. It's really is laugh out loud funny in that it's about a town that the factory closed and this one guy, like everybody, is out. He's unemployed. He's working with a bookie. He's betting on Canadian teams that he doesn't know the teams. And then the bookie offers him a job to kill his wife. And so
let's laugh. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that he comes out and goes, yes, I've got work. I've got employment. And so it's his attitude towards it. And so then he becomes a hitman. And he's in some absurd situations. He's also working for a gas-and-go convenience store. And then we have a hilarious scene where the corporate manager is coming in. And we also have a hilarious scene where he has the police investigators questioning him and how he dances around them. It's very light, very funny. It's not the kind of, you know, deep angst-ridden when he pops the people off. It's just the gun goes bang and then he moves on. So it's very light. It's only 177 pages, easy to read with a tall glass of lemonade.
The book is called Since the Layoffs.
By Ian Levinson.
By Ian Levinson. So we're talking about funny books. The other one that that Kevin just brought to us is Famous Writers I Have Known by James Margeson. So I'm writing those two down anyway for our, and what I'm going to do is I'm doing my best to keep a list here as our guests speak about these books, and I'll try to have them posted on the website. So if you miss out, you can always just check the website a bit later, and we'll have the titles for you. Laugh Out Loud books are always fun, and they are hard to find. The only one that comes to my mind right away is, of course, the perennial Confederacy of Dunces, which I will be buried holding a copy of in my hand there.
Yeah.
Do you think that books that are very funny, that have a lot of humor, are taken less seriously by the publishing establishment?
I'd like to answer that.
Please do.
You know, Thurber House has the only recognition of humor writing in the country.
Wow.
With the Thurber Prize for American Humor. And humor is an extremely subjective area. We have committees who read the submissions each year, and what I might think is hysterical, the next person thinks is really dull. I don't think it's because humor is not taken seriously. I think it is because it is so very difficult to write good humor. Mm-hmm. And it being laugh aloud is not the criterion. There should be wit and they should be smart, at least for the Thurber Prize. And that's why I cited Trillin and Frazier. And, you know, most of the writers for The New Yorker, when they are writing their humor pieces, they're very Thurber-esque, actually. So I don't think it's that the publishers are not taking it seriously. I think there's not a great amount of good humor writing.
We have to take a break. We're going to talk more about this with Suzanne Jaffe from the Thurber House, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and Capital University professor Kevin Griffith. Give us a call and let us know the last book that you made you laugh out loud, if you will, or you thought was very, very witty and well done. We really want to hear no more about funny books for summer. 614-292-8513. You can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Don't go away. We are back. We are talking about just good books in general, but we like to talk about books for the summer. We're talking about books that make people laugh or books that are funny or have great humor in them and great pathos as well. We've had some recommendations, though, such far. Since the Layoffs by Levinson was one, and Famous Writers I Have Known, which I'm going to run out and get as soon as we get off the air here. We do have some calls coming in. We have a call from Terry in Columbus who has some recommendations. Hello, Terry.
Hi there. I found a very, very good biography. It's the biography of John Updike. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned The New Yorker. He, of course, wrote for The New Yorker and the new James Thurber. And this is a very well-written book. It's brand new. It's by Adam Begley.
Okay. Terrific. We thank you for that.
Sure. And I just finished reading Ann Tyler's 2012 book, The Beginner's Goodbye. You probably mentioned that on the show already at some point.
Not today. You have. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of yours.
We appreciate very much the recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you, Terry. And Tyler, she's somebody who's been around for a while and gets a lot of great press as well. Yeah. We'll wait for a bit to take a few more calls, but let's talk about Cassie Rose. You were talking about a triptych or a trilogy of novels by the same author that's got a kind of an interesting distribution.
Yes, Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy. Interesting because the publisher is bringing all three books out within this year, which is nice for the readers because then you don't have to wait for a year in between. It's the first one, Annihilation, came out in February. The second one, Authority, came out in May. And the last one is going to, Acceptance, is going to come out in September. I am not a trilogy reader. In fact, I can read the first book and not read the rest of them. I'm also not a fantasy apocalyptic reader. And that's what this series is. And I became riveted with Annihilation. It's about place in the United States called Area X that the media has said has an environmental disaster going on, so it's been quarantined off. And Annihilation is about sending an expedition in to this area. It's the 12th expedition. And I highly recommend you read that book. Authority, the second one, which I just finished, is about the Southern Reach. It is after that expedition, and it is about a man who has been appointed the new director. And the Southern Reach is the government agency that is overseeing this strange area. And what's fascinating is that you find that it's falling apart. They're weird people. And his mother is deeply involved in the Southern Reach, which is gives you a CIA feel about it. The mystery about it, the science fiction about it, the creepiness about it is just great. And I don't know what it is that has fascinated me other than the fact that he's done it very, very well. So this is a book that it will totally involve you.
So what you have brought us, Authority, is the second in the trilogy.
Yes,
and
yes.
Will you read the third?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
James Vandermeer is the author.
Jeff
Vandermeer. I beg your pardon.
Yes, and absolutely start with the first.
Okay. All right. We have that, and we have Bird Box that Kevin Griffith has brought us. We also have a number to give, 292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. We do love our email. Bird Box, Kevin.
Yes.
Great title.
It is an interesting title, and I read this book upon Cassie's recommendation. She said that there was a lot going on in her blog about this book, but you haven't read it yourself, right?
I have not.
Okay,
no.
So that's great. So this will be news to you. I'm going to help you out here. Bird Box. It's a horror novel. And Bird Box refers to a box of birds that these, again, it's the post-apocalyptic thing going on here. This is refers to a box of birds that these survivors find that, and the birds make a lot of noise and chirp and screech when an intruder comes near their area. That's what the title comes from. However, this book is interesting. It's a horror novel, science fiction kind of as well. The author is Josh Malerman. It's his first novel. That's kind of interesting. And this is one of those novels that you read for entertainment purely. It's built upon a concept. None of the characters are that engaging, although the concept is really engaging. And the concept is this. Apparently what happens is that these creatures from another dimension somehow get on the Earth. And that seems kind of silly, but apparently because we just can't comprehend how they look because they're from this other dimension, that if you just see them, even for an instant, you go insane. And so people start going insane, committing incredibly violent acts, committing suicide, et cetera.
That's an opera. There's a bunch of operas. That, yeah.
And so what happens is people immediately retreat into their homes, put curtains over their homes, blankets, sheets. And the only way you can go outside is you have to be blindfolded. And so everybody's operating outside without being able to see. And it sets up some intriguing conflicts, intriguing stories of survival, that kind of thing. The main character Mallory is a somewhat engaging character, and she's trying to keep her two children alive and eventually get them down the river to a big institution that's sort of holding its own against these creatures. And there's some interesting subplots too, with just a little bit with what madness really is, because these survivors let a person into their group named Gary. And Gary seems to be normal, but it turns out that he's just a really, really insane person who's learned to fool people that he's somewhat normal. And that begins to come out when, with certain clues, and things get worse and everybody ends up dead and she has to flee, that kind of thing.
All right, you're giving too much of
so,
it away.
No, no.
I'll stop
not,
you when everybody ends up
once
dead.
You understand the concept, there's no spoiler okay. alert here. But it's a very good book. And so... if you're into good horror and you want something, again, that's just for entertainment value, Bird Box by Josh Malerman, a good book. Good
and read. We have two recommendations that have come in, one from George by email, David Sedaris, Me Talk Pretty Someday, that's a big name, and that's a very funny author. Mm-hmm. And we also have Bad Monkey by Carl Hiaasen. I've never read Carl. He's the one in Florida, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me about Suzanne.
He's wonderful. Okay. He's brilliant. Actually, the Sedaris book won the Thurber Prize for Humor.
Right.
So the recommendation is a very wise one. And Carl Hiaasen started out actually with a co-author many years ago and was doing not hard-boiled, but sort of suspense thrillers. And he writes for the Miami Herald, and is actually a very good friend of Dave Barry's.
Oh, sure.
But then Carl started doing real deep tongue-in-cheek kind of mysteries. Florida is absolutely central to it. His humor is central to it, and he also does children's books. He's a brilliant writer.
He's somebody that's very high profile that I don't know, and that's going to change shortly. Thank you for that. Thank you very much for the suggestion. We have a call from Myra in Clintonville, and I hope I'm saying that name correctly. Hi there.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi. So I just finished Lionel Asbo's State of England, and I think it's supposed to be a satire, but I'm not sure. And I kept reading because Martin Amis constructs great sentences, and the whole time I'm reading, I'm thinking, I don't even care about these characters, but I'm turning the page. So, what do you know about this book? What am I not getting?
The title is State of England?
Lionel Asbo, State of England, by Martin Amis, Kingsley Amis' son.
Yeah, I know Martin Amis, but the title is not ringing a bell with anybody?
I've not read that Martin Amis book. I've read a couple other of his earlier books.
I think his newest.
Yeah, it's his newest. He's a brilliant writer. You're right. His sentences are very good. He's very smart. But I have not read that one. I read London Fields there was another one that I read. He's very, very good.
That sounds similar to his father, Kingsley Amis, too. You think of a novel like The Green Man by Kingsley Amis, and that I got the same feeling with that novel as well. Is what I'm reading here a satire, or is it, I'm not really laughing or getting it, but it's a really engaging book, and I want to continue to the end. And that was a strange book as well, combining supernatural elements, romance. It was almost like a academic comedy in places, and so maybe that's just a family trait, is they have fiction.
Martin is sort of the British Philip Roth. There's a mean-spiritedness to
There's
him.
There's points in the book where he slips into the most inconceivable violence.
Really?
And then, like suddenly something amazingly and shockingly violent happens, and then the book carries on. And you're just, left reeling. It's stuck in your head for the day. Your mind keeps going back to this, violent incident. You're, almost having flashbacks from the book. But the narrative just pulls you until before I knew it, last night at about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was reading the last page.
Well, this sounds like a very, very special kind of a skill for a writer to sort of drag you along, even if you're not always willing to go, but you can't stop. And figure out if he's teasing you or not. And I don't know many other writers who really do that, but Martin Amis, you're making sound as if he's really one of them. We have a call from Helen in Whitehall with a suggestion for us. Hello, Helen.
Hi. I just read this book called The Signature of All Things by Elizabeth Gilbert. I thought it was really good. It was hard to put down. I just read it pretty much straight through.
She's the one meant Eat, Pray, Love. Isn't that Elizabeth Gilbert? Yes, yeah.
I didn't read that, and it got bad reviews as a movie, so I didn't go see it. So this is all new to me, this lady. But this book was about a botanist, a woman botanist from the early 1800s and all about her life and how unusual she was for her time period. And I found it fascinating.
Thank you so much for the recommendation. She's another high-profile author, Elizabeth Gilbert. We enjoyed hearing about that. Now, I know, Suzanne Jaffe, you brought a stack of books with you.
Yes.
You talked about what's going on with the Thurber House picnics, but you also have a stack of books to share with us.
These are all picnic people.
Okay, talk to me.
They're all picnic people, but can I just make a recommendation before I
Please.
Get to the picnics for my summer read? You know John Banville, who writes
yes.
as Benjamin Black.
Yeah.
And he has these wonderful mysteries, Christine Falls. But his new one is called The Black-Eyed Blonde. Did you guys discuss it here at all?
No.
Okay, this is fascinating. He worked with Candace Bergen out in Hollywood to channel Philip Marlowe. And he does a brilliant, brilliant job. So I do want to recommend for a great summer read, The Black-Eyed Blonde by Benjamin Black. Okay, so for the summer, I mentioned David Giffels. The next one, our picnics run every other Wednesday. And so on July 9th, we are bringing out a book called Fourth Down and Out by Andrew Welch Huggins.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Okay, he is a legal affairs reporter for the AP here in Columbus. And this is the first of a mystery. The hero or anti-hero was a former OSU quarterback. So do I really have to say anything more? All right. So that's July 9th. After that, we have a Cleveland author coming, Claire McMillan. That's going to be on July 23rd. Her novel, a debut novel, is called Gilded Age, and she channels Edith Wharton's House of Mirth. This is a novel about a woman who makes a very good marriage in New York and then a scandalous divorce that takes her to rehab, which, of course, is very modern. And then she moves to Cleveland society and the choices one makes and how society is modernized, so you have the woman going to the benefit ball who also might have a tattoo. It's very interesting. It's extremely well done. Got very good reviews.
The title again, please.
Gilded Age by Claire McMillan.
And she's coming on
She's coming on July 23rd.
For the picnic at the Thurber House.
For picnic. And our very last one is August 6th, and this is Tony Mendoza. And I just want to read a blurb because this will say everything that needs to be said. I'm quoting, forget Ricky Ricardo, forget Godfather 2, forget Hemingway. If you want to know what it was like to live in Havana, Cuba during the 1950s, this is your best guide. It's called A Cuban Summer. And Tony actually was born in Havana. He was a professor of art at OSU for 25 years. He is a highly awarded photographer. And this is a novel about a 13-year-old boy in 1954 Havana, and all he can think about is sex. So that's
really?
August 6th.
Wow. Really? The things you learn from this program, I must tell you. Thank you very much, Suzanne Jaffe, for those recommendations. Now, is it possible to come to the picnics at the last minute?
Yes. We have walk-ins all the time.
Okay. Very good. Cassie Rose, what is Play It Again?
Oh, Play It Again is a wonderful book written by Alan Rusbridger. Alan Rusbridger is the editor-in-chief of The Guardian, which is one of the foremost newspapers in the world. And he's also an amateur pianist, amateur in that he's a great sight reader, very undisciplined. And he decides one year that he's going to learn to play Chopin's Ballade in G minor, which is one of the most difficult piano pieces in the world. Most of the pianists, the great concert pianists, will say the coda is very daunting. Anyway, he decides to give himself a year to do it, 20 minutes of practice a day. Well, again, he's the editor of The Guardian, and this is the year when he was working on WikiLeaks and partnering with Julian Assange, and also the year that they broke the phone hacking. This is a person who will stop work at midnight and have a breakfast meeting, a person who is flying into Tripoli to negotiate the release of a kidnapped reporter. So you think you don't have time to do what you want to do in life, you can read this book and you will find out that, yes, your ambitions can be realized. It's not, I don't say that to say it's an inspiring book. It's a very realistic book. It is wonderful to read about his work and what his job entails. And also, if you enjoy music and you know music, you will very much enjoy what he goes through learning the ballad.
If you don't know music that well, can you still have a good time with this book?
You can, but your eyes will glaze over when he talks about his practice sessions, and he also goes through all the measures and trying to learn them. But you can skip those entries because he's written it like a diary, so you could just skip over that and go on. What comes through and that's so amazing is that, I mean, he has a phenomenal job, and nowhere in this book does he complain or say, gee, I don't have enough time for this or that. He takes each day and lives it fully, and he is just, there's a moment also when, I forget where he was, maybe it was that he was in Tripoli, and they were in this hotel, and there's a piano there. And he goes and sits down at the piano and works on the ballad because he brought the music with him. So here they are in this area where a civil war is going on, and he's playing the ballad and working his way through it.
And I think to some people he might be inviting mockery by doing that. I mean, not how I feel. He sounds like the kind of guy you want to have a beer with.
Yes.
Alan Rustridge. Mm-hmm.
He's in his 50s, too, okay. So it's not like he's, you know, 30 years old and got a lot of energy on 3 hours of sleep.
I don't want to spoiler alert. I don't want to ask you if he mastered the piece yet, so we'll just wait and mm-hmm. read that book. We thank you for that recommendation. We are going to take a break now for about 90 seconds and come on back. You can call us at 292-8513 to talk about books with Kevin Griffith, Cassie Rose, and Suzanne Jaffe, and you could also send email to allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. Back soon. Don't go away. We are back, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy, talking with Cassie Rose, Suzanne Jaffe, and Kevin Griffith. And what I wanted to ask you, because all of you have your ears to the ground about publishing and about books, what's the buzz? What are the hot new books that have either just been published or are about to be published that are really attracting a lot of attention?
Okay.
Okay. How about you, Cassie?
There are two that come to mind. Okay. One, I briefly mentioned, The Truth About the Harry Quebert Affair by Joel Dicker. It is a phenomenal number one international bestseller. And I, by phenomenal, I mean phenomenal. Every country. What is interesting is that bestsellers over in Europe or on the continent rarely become bestsellers here, and they're banking on it. It is a thriller. It's one of those 600 pagers. It has sort of a typical premise here. You know, a 15-year-old girl goes missing. 30 years later, someone is accused of the crime. What is interesting about it is the person accused is an author. He admits to having had an affair with her, and he is the mentor to another author who has come to visit him and decides he's got to unveil the truth of all of this. There are many subplots in it, many twists here and there. Anyway, it's got huge buzz.
Give us the title and author again, okay?
It's called The Truth About the Harry Quebert, Quebert Affair by Joel Dicker. Joel Dicker was born in Switzerland, but he spent much of his youth in New Hampshire, which is where this takes place, small town in New Hampshire. Again, it's got huge buzz. Another book that has huge buzz is Tom Rachman, Rachman, who wrote The Imperfectionists, which got great reviews. People loved it. It's also very funny, very smart, funny book about journalists at a Rome newspaper. That came out several years ago. But his new novel, his second, is out. It's The Rise and Fall of Great Powers. And there's a lot of buzz about it. It follows a woman through her youth and then at the end where she is running a bookstore in Wales. A lot of back and forth between the present and the past. But again, that one's getting a lot of buzz.
Two good reads getting a lot of buzz. Buzz being our buzzword right now. Kevin, how about you? Do you have anything you're looking forward to?
Yeah, my wife recommended it to me, and then I read it myself, and we talked about it on the last show, and then I noticed it was now in the top 10 as the storied life of A.J. Fickrey. So that's awfully gaining a lot of traction.
Suzanne, you got her attention.
Do you like that book?
I loved it.
What's the name of the author again? Because the name of the author escapes me. The storied life of A.J. Fickrey. It's a wonderful read. It's about the redemptive power of books. And by books, we mean paper and spine books.
Yes.
And it's about life in a little bookstore in a little town on an island off the East Coast. A wonderful summer reading. Emotional when it needs to be emotional, sentimental when it needs to be, but not too much, and just a really beautiful book.
Gabrielle Zevin.
That's right. I noticed it's now crept into the top 10, so and it deserves to be there, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a book lover's book.
Is it really?
Yeah,
okay.
It really is.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
We have a call from Gail in Columbus who's been waiting patiently with a recommendation. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I wanted to recommend a book called The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern. I read it. I loved it. I read it again within a year of reading it the first time. It's about two wizards who periodically stage a competition between the two of them with two apprentices who don't know that they're in this competition. And in this particular one, the field of play is a circus that's all magic. It was just, it was a great book. It would make a really great movie.
It probably is on its way to doing that. The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern. Thank you so much, Gail, for the recommendation. And I had asked Suzanne Jaffe to give me some hot titles that she's expecting or has already read.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Ben McIntyre. And he has done phenomenal. He's a British journalist turned writer. And when all the archives in England from World War II were made available, or at least many of them, he has really made this his field of dreams. And A Spy Among Us, A Spy Among Friends is his new one, and it is about the Kim Philby the Cambridge spies. And
fill us in a little bit about that was.
Well, this was back, Kim Philby, this was all these very Oxford and Eton and Cambridge and very well-connected, well-raised young men. And during World War II, actually prior to World War II, they are recruited to M16. And it's very sad because they had everything and it was never enough. For Kim Philby, it was just never enough. And he was a brilliant, brilliant double agent. And even McIntyre could not get all the records revealed and released. But I do urge you to, if this is brilliant nonfiction, his style, McIntyre's style, his narrative style is just so engaging. And it's a disturbing story because, of course, it affected the OSS as well. And it had international repercussions.
Was not one of the spies the master of the Queen's pictures? Didn't he have an appointment to the...
Absolutely, yes.
Somebody else, maybe. Okay. Give us the title one more time, Suzanne.
A Spy Among Friends, and the author is Ben McIntyre.
Very good. A Spy Among Friends, and we have a call from Mark, who is actually recommending a book by my daughter's favorite author. Hello, Mark. Go ahead.
Hello. Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
You mentioned humor, and these aren't new books, but Bill Bryson writes some very humorous books, I think. If you... The Walk in the Woods, which is his book about walking the Appalachian Trail, is a put the book down, laugh out loud if you're a hiker at all. And then the other book he wrote that I thought had a lot of good humor was Thunderbolt Kid. And I don't read much fiction, and the book that I would highly recommend nonfiction is Boys in the Boat, which I just finished.
Oh.
Which is written... But you'll have to help me with the author. He wrote Unbroken about Louis Zamperini.
Hildebrand.
Both of those are very good, hard to put down books.
There's one Bill Bryson book that's hysterical where he's gonna walk the Appalachian Trail, and he hooks up with a buddy to join him, and he hasn't seen the buddy in a long time, and the guy gets off the plane, and he's 40 pounds overweight, and he has in his luggage Milky Way bars and all kinds of... He's a man after my own heart, and he struggles, but I think he makes it. Mark, I thank you very much for the recommendation. 292-8513, if you'd like to join us. You can also send us, as I said, email to allsides@wosu.org. We have had some terrific recommendations. I'm particularly interested in A Spy Among Friends. That sounds like a compelling book. We don't talk about nonfiction all that much. We have today. I'm going to ask Kevin if he has a nonfiction recommendation for us.
If you mean by nonfiction, this is one of those strange quirks of the library system. If you mean by nonfiction poetry, yes, I have a
Go
poetry
ahead.
Book.
All right. Here we go. Great.
And no one thinks of poetry in the summer because the summer is all supposed to be, right, about feeling good, light, right, and days and
you're
nights
gonna,
on the beach.
You're
and,
not going to read Anne Sexton to us.
Well,
you,
pretty no, much no. close. Oh. But I've been, I've been meaning to mention this book, and we talk about if there's a book of poetry you should read that's just come out. One of my favorite poets is Franz Wright. Franz Wright is the winner of the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago for Walking to Martha's Vineyard. He's the son of the famous Ohio poet, James Wright, whom we all know. His latest, Franz Wright's latest book is F. It's just called F, Poems by Franz Wright. He's consistently surprising and consistently beautiful writer, and he writes about cliched topics in a very uncliched way, mostly depression, but also battling with cancer, which he's struggling with. I'll just read a little bit of Four in the Morning, the lead-off poem in this book. I woke and closed my eyes. There it stood again, wood's edge and depression's deepening shade, inviting me in, saying, no one is here. No one was there to be ashamed of me. He has these great last lines, I think. And so if you're tired of light, frothy things, or you need a little antidote to that at times, remember that poetry is out there. And poetry is what elevates us out of our, right, thin veneer of superficiality sometimes, I think. And so that's
and
good
Milky
to read.
Milky Way bars, yes.
Yes, Milky Way bars as well.
That's good, too, yes. Thank you for that. I'm always glad when you're able to read to us a little poetry for that, Kevin Griffith. Do you teach? Can one teach poetry?
You can only encourage it.
Okay. There's no how to do it. There's no poetry writing for dummies kind of.
I think people, I hate to say it, but people are born poets and you have to encourage them. Yep.
I have a couple of emails to share with everybody. A recommendation from Marianne in Gahanna. American Rust by Philip Meyer. The novel shows the financial, social, and emotional struggles of a Rust Belt town devastated by mill closings. That rings true for so many people now. And from Steve, Red Shirts by John Scalzi. The book's an easy read and thoroughly funny science fiction with a philosophical literary twist. He says, think Star Trek, but there's more to it than that. That's Red Shirts by John Scalzi. Always enjoy getting recommendations from people out there. Let's see. We talked about Susanna. Now, if I walked into the Thurber House and I just was someone who liked to read and liked letters and I walked in there, first of all, could I? And secondly, what would I do there?
Well, Thurber House is open every single day of the week from 1 to 4. It's free because Thurber House is a living museum. And so even though we're working there, you're welcome to come into any room and you can do a self-guided or a guided tour. And you see where Thurber House actually slept, and you see where his brother's rooms are. And we have a little museum and you can take a tour of Thurber House. And it's charming. Plus, we have the Reading Garden. And this is where some of Thurber's dogs were made into statues. Yeah. And you can sit out there with the little doggies and read.
Talk about the classes, too, and all the kind. If you are a writer or an armchair writer and you're trying to get into it.
Okay. Every spring and every fall, we have six different, it's sort of like a little tasting menu of classes for adults. There are adult writing workshops. So we can offer, it's a 2-hour on Monday nights, and they offer everything from character and dialogue to playwriting, to narrative, to poetry, to journalism, to writing a memoir. And we offer these by professional writers in the Central Ohio area. And they're terrific. So this is for those 18 and over. Then we have the Young Writers Studio, and that's for teens in grades 9 through 12. And that meets every other Wednesday. And then we have our wonderful summer writing camp that's going on right now.
Remind people where you are.
77 Jefferson Avenue between Broad and Long.
It's a lovely,
and free parking.
It's a lovely brick house with free parking. Very,
yes.
Very nice. The home of James Thurber, now the literary center of Central Ohio, certainly, yes. The Thurber House. And I also wanted to find out from each of you if there's a book that you either want to talk about because it's overrated or something that you really have never, ever read that you should read, and it's on your list, and it should be close to the top. Kevin looks very quizzical.
A book that's overrated.
A hot book, really, that you think, eh, you know.
All I'll say is this. I went back to read Stephen King's The Shining, which I had never read before, probably one of the few people on the planet who had never read, and I could not get through it because I thought... I thought it was overrated. I thought, given all the blurbs and attention to Stephen King, I really like Carrie, but then when I hit The Shining, I thought, boy, I know where this is going, and he's just really drawing out a story that should be told in about 100 pages to about 400 pages, and I was somewhat disappointed. So I guess I would have to say that that comes to mind when we talk about that. And so there you go.
The one Stephen King book I couldn't put down was 11/22/63, mm-hmm. which is about, of course, the day JFK mm-hmm. was assassinated. It takes place in Dallas and involves time travel, and it's really weird, but it was very, very compelling. But mm-hmm. I think for Stephen King, if you've seen the movie, you don't tend to go back to the book because they all become
you understand the central gimmick, and then the book becomes a little disappointing. Yeah, that's right. So that would be my candidate.
And what have you never read you should read?
Never read that I should read. Well, I'll admit it here. I've never read Ulysses, and I probably should
read
it.
You'd love it. Oh.
Yeah. I've read bits of it, you know, dabbled with it.
I read it last year. It's like sitting down at the kitchen table in my grandparents' house, even though they were a little eccentric, but the Brogues and the whole
But in my defense, I did read Finnegan's Wake. We spent a year reading Finnegan's Wake aloud, so I did that. So
wow.
I think that lets me off the hook with Ulysses.
Nobody understands Finnegan. Good for you.
No.
Excellent. I'm going to write this down.
I still don't. But
Kevin Griffith has read Finnegan's Wake. How about Cassie Rose?
What I should be reading?
Yeah.
And I haven't. It's more along the lines, I haven't finished it. And it's War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy.
I'm reading it now.
Are you?
10 pages a day.
It's a wonderful book. That's the thing, but it's very big, and it's been sitting on my reading table. I got through the first, I don't know, several hundred pages, and I had to put it down. I haven't picked it up again.
Well, the thing is, you get immersed. What battle are we on? And who, really, I mean, it's
yes.
just, it's almost as if you have to know your history really well of that period. But
and you also have to find the right translation
right,
of it.
Yeah.
Because the most recent one, it was a Russian couple that had something in Perensky or something. I was reading that because they were staying true to the French. And so you had several parts of the book that were in French. And of course, it would be translated for you. But I found it was very hard to go back and forth, and it didn't work for me. So then I wanted to go to one of the original translations, which is called the Maud translation. And I found that to be very compelling. Anyway, long story short, I need to finish War and Peace.
Do what I do. I'm reading 10 pages a day.
Okay.
I put it down. That's enough for me. And really, it'll take me till Christmas, but I don't care. It's, you know, I will have read it. So there you are. Mm-hmm. How about Suzanne Jaffe?
Well, I'm afraid it's also a Russian. I picked it up. I started it. I would put it down. I'd pick it up. I felt so guilty that I wasn't getting through with it. And it's Dr. Zhivago.
Oh,
and
wow.
I know it's wonderful. I know it. I need to read it. But then there are these other books I have to read first.
Right. Well, do you have to read for your job? I mean, are there books you have to read to function in your position?
Not really. Okay. I do it because I want to.
Yeah. Also, you at least once a year, I know, bring a very high-profile author in to speak to large audiences. Scott Berg was last year, I think it was.
Scott was here, yeah.
He had the biography of Woodrow Wilson. Can you tell us who's coming up? Or is it
too
soon?
No,
okay.
It's not a secret. Actually, it was just announced, I guess, last week. In November, we are bringing in Janet Ivanovich, who, of course, is a humongous best-selling author. She does the Stephanie Plum mysteries, and she also has a new series with the producer and writer of the old Monk TV series, Lee Goldberg. And this is about an FBI agent, a pair. And so she will be here as a special Evenings with Author guest for Thurber House on November 18th. And it's going to be held at COSI.
How do you choose your either picnic? I know you have Ohio writers you focus on for the picnics, but and also your sort of marquee writer. How do you choose who you want
all
to come?
All the authors are actually chosen the same way, and that is for diversity of audience appeal. For instance, last year we had the Dungeons and Dragons people, but then we'll have a Scott Berg or Chris Matthews. We've had Doris Kearns Goodwin. It really is, we want diversity, we want variety, we want fiction and nonfiction, because our events are very author-driven.
That's the Thurber House. There's lots going on, and you can, Suzanne Jaffe says, you can walk in any day, 1 to 4 p.m., and maybe she'll make you a sandwich. Who knows? Cassie Rose, thank you very much. Your blog is thelongestchapter.com, which everybody should read if you care about books. And Kevin Griffith, poet and professor of creative writing at Capital University and Library Maven. I know that because I see him there all the time. I thank you all for your participation today. I am going to try to get some of these titles on the website. I can just, off the top of my head, Since the Layoffs by Levinson, funny, compelling book. The new biography of John Updike by Adam Begley. Southern Reach, Big Box, and Carl Hyacin. Again, he's somebody I've never read but should have, and Suzanne says so, so I'm going to. Thank you all. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thanks to producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Olivia Rojas, Justin English, Emmy Beach, Julia Hyder, Letitia Wiggins, and the new kid whose name is not written down here. Thank you all very much. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend. Good afternoon.